Good afternoon, everyone. Why she said that because I'll just introduce myself. I'm Okpeyemi Akinyemi from Covenant University in Nigeria, from the Department of Economics and Development Studies. But I'm currently a guest researcher for 3 months at the Nordic African Institute, and my host is Jürgen Levering, who I believe is also a non-resident fellow here. I'm really delighted to be here, and I appreciate the warm reception that I received and the wonderful people I've met since I came in. And I'll just be sharing an idea about my current research work, and hopefully I'll be able to get some useful comments on moving the work forward. A little background about myself. I majorly work on, I got my PhD in 2017 from Nigeria, and my areas of research mainly looks at the linkage and the interactions between the energy sector and the environment. So I'm concerned about issues of environmental sustainability, how to have, how to achieve sustainable development with specific focus on developing countries. So what are some of the ways that developing countries can have access to resources that can accelerate their transition to sustainable development path? So that envelopes what my work is about. And this afternoon, I was speaking to us on green energy and green growth strategy for sustainable development of sub-Saharan African countries. And I'll define the concept as I move along. Usually, I like to have a key message at the beginning of my presentation. So if at the end of, after now, you don't hear anything again I'm saying, but this is the key message of the presentation, and more like a take-home. So you'll be able to know, okay, I attended the presentation today, and this was what the presentation is about. Basically, the research will try to look at the extent to which green energy, or more likely renewable energy, can support green growth transition for developing countries, but we focus on sub-Saharan African countries. Okay, so different sectors and different aspects of the economy will play their roles differently, and so this focuses on what role the energy sector, by providing green energy or cleaner forms of energy, plays. And these are the 17 Sustainable Development Goals that I'm sure everybody in this room are familiar with. And then resources and a lot of work are going to be essential to achieve these sustainable development goals, to have a global view. And of these goals, two goals stand out in terms of looking at energy and also climate change. Okay, there are some other goals that also look at some of these that are interlapping, overlapping on this issue, but for goal 7 and goal 13 actually focuses on the issue between green energy and green growth in terms of having access to affordable and clean energy, and also climate action, having environmental sustainability and a better environment. And Cedar has spoke to us on the need for access to energy. Okay, just on brief definition of concept. When we talk about sustainable development, we're just talking about development that does not compromise the ability of future generations to be able to provide for themselves or meet their own needs, while also ensuring that present generation are able to also meet their own needs. Excuse me. And in terms of green growth, it's simply talking about an alternative growth path that uses resources sustainably, moving from, for instance, a brown growth or a dirty growth to green growth, a growth that does not develop the economy or industrialize at the expense of the environment. So in the past, you have industrialization activities for prosperity, for economic prosperity, that are focused on an ideology of growing now and cleaning up later. So green growth emphasizes the importance of doing this simultaneously. We can have growth and environmental sustainability at the same time. In terms of green energy, we're simply talking about energy from natural sources, energy that can renew themselves and also have minimal impact on the environment. And the minimal is inverted comma, because in the literature, some believe that there's still some level of emission. It's just really minimal. Some believe there are no emissions. Okay, so in other words, green energy contributes to transition to green growth in developing countries, and we have evidence of that from empirical literature. And so why green growth? A key definition or explanation by the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development in 2011 stands out when they believe that we need green growth because there are increasing risks to development that, if not checked, can result in threats to human survival. So we are seeing climate change impact manifesting in different dimensions across the world. And this, from scientific evidence, has suggested that this impact may likely increase if we don't decide to begin to take urgent action or take commitment. So this is why green growth is important. And those of us that work in the area of green economy, green growth, we understand the political dynamics to it, where there are usually some conspiracy theories surrounding climate change and things like that, that the scientific facts are falsified, the problems are not as pronounced as they make them look, it's a cost to make money and generate income, and all of those. But as researchers, we base our discussions on facts and evidence that we have. These are some of the benefits of green growth, why it is important, and why there is need for developing countries to embrace it, and some of these environmental issues that are most vulnerable to them, and also many of them have serious economic issues that if they can tap into green growth, they can experience a lot of benefits, stronger economic growth, reduction in poverty rate, poverty level, better redistribution of income, and have not just have growth, but growth that produces job, employment generation, there are employment opportunities, green jobs, greater energy security is going to enhance supply of energy resources, reduce vulnerability as well to climate change, but a more secure livelihoods, particularly for those who are dependent on, they get their incomes from natural resources. Energy is very important. It underlines everything we do. We need it for transportation. We need it for industrial production to move from one place to another, for cooling, heating, lighting, and meeting a lot of other needs. So it's an essential need. But then, because of the nature of the way it's being produced, distributed, and consumed, it impacts negatively on the environment. And if not adequately programmed, it can be counterproductive to sustainable development achievement or desire of many countries. So greening the energy sector is very key, it's very important, and it's the right step to go. What is the motivation for this study? Many developing countries, including countries in sub-Saharan Africa, the adoption of green growth is still low. There has been some progress from some monitoring, but it's still moving at a really, really slow pace, considering the fact that most of the goals of the sustainable development goals have to be achieved by 2030. I'm just have a few years away. By the way, sub-Saharan African countries just covers all African countries apart from North Africa. That's excluding Tunisia, Egypt. So, and then for many of them, green growth, green economy, transitioning to a green economy, it's not a priority for many of them. Some of them are going through war, Somalia, Sudan, and so the green growth is exactly not where they want to commit resources to right now, and there is no favorable investment environment to invest there. And in some other instances, you have some situations where even though some countries have signed some documents to commit to reducing greenhouse emissions and achieve some of the imperatives of green growth, the documents are just lying on the shelves. And many of them, when you're even talking with them about it, they're not even aware that that was what they signed about. They just signed the document and travel as diplomats to those conferences, collect ESTA code money, and just come back. And the cycle just continues like that. So there are so many challenges, and there are so many problems, ranging from financial obstacles, technological barriers, political issues, and some part of the work we also do also looks at the political economy of this. I did my PhD on energy subsidy and environmental quality, and we discovered an aspect of, an important aspect is also the political economy of energy subsidy. And you discover that the political environment is so key to policy analysis. If you don't understand how the political environment works, how the political actors, how they reason, you will not be able to get across to them. And they are the ones that implement policies. You need them to be on your side and provide policy support for investors, for consumers, for industries to do what is needed. And opportunities are available even in spite of the challenges. So there is need to focus on those opportunities and seek for ways to minimize the challenges. So what role can energy sector play in this transition to green growth even with the challenges that we have? These are specific objectives. Firstly, we'll try to examine the empirical link between renewable energy, that's the indicator of renewable energy, and the measure of green growth. So that's like building a green model where we try to do some simulations that if we pursue a broad path that is green in nature and a significant part of the economy, or try to look at the current share of renewable presently, representing that with green energy, what kind of relationship can we see there? Then secondly, with that first objective is going to follow a secondary analysis, while the second and the third will follow a primary analysis, where the second one, we try to investigate green practices in terms of the industrial sector. So we'll work on the industrial sector and also have a consumer household aspect. Last year, I completed a project with a team on green industrialization in ECOWAS, where we try to do an assessment of green industrialization practices in industries in Ghana and in Nigeria. And currently we are seeking for funding to do a second as part of the project where we'll be able to cover more countries and also look outside ECOWAS. And possibly one of the limitations we had there were the fact that we're not getting enough cooperation from the big companies. Okay, so many of them, you go to them, some of them are Indian companies, are international companies, some of them are domestic companies, and they just tell you right off when you tell them what you want to do that as a company policy, they don't take part in research. So at the end of the day, a larger portion of the study was then on medium, micro, and small medium scale enterprises, where we tried to look at what types of green practices. We listed some green indicators for them, and which of them do you do, what type of energy do you use, and things like that. So this goes further to them focus on the type of energy sources they use, why they use them, and are they aware about alternatives, alternative types, green, cleaner ones, would they be willing to use it, and things like that. And then the other part focuses on household levels. And in the past years, at least I'm aware for ECOWAS countries in West Africa, there's been a lot of inflow of funding, particularly from Europe, in terms of adopting renewable energy. Most especially, it's been focused on use in the rural areas as a means of increasing access to energy. And when he was presenting his work, I saw that he tried to tell us about the percentage of energy access between urban and rural households. And this is almost looking the same for most of countries in sub-Saharan Africa, maybe except for South Africa and probably Rwanda. And then they have been getting some funding, but it's being used as an off-grid type of technology for those in the rural areas who don't have access to the national grid to have access to energy. So they go to the communities and install solar panels for them, and they have energy. Okay, let me move on quickly. Okay, this is just looking at empirical literature. There's growing the literature on green growth, green energy has been growing in the last 3-4 years, and different aspects of the economy is always being assessed, from welfare, impact on jobs, and many institutions. These organizations have been doing a lot of work on this area, and the consensus is that green energy can support green growth, even though there are limitations. But then data for analysis still remains a challenge. Like, for instance, OECD is doing amazing work. They have a lot of resources, but it's limited to OECD member countries. And so you don't have data when you begin to work with developing countries. This summary of some of the key literature to support the fact that green energy can be used, can be useful for transition. Okay, this theoretically is just showing movement from the traditional growth model to a model that is green, that emphasizes importance of environment. So you have traditional growth theory that believes that output of growth is a function of labor, capital, and technology. And then over time, from evolution from Roman, Lucas, involving innovation, doing it by learning, research, and all that, we then have where we now have a point where they call for the incorporation of environment in the growth model, where it's treated as national capital. So you have it as E. And so you have a growth process that gives consideration to the environment, and you don't use resources, natural resources, in a manner that deteriorate the environment. So environmental policies are driving green policies as a source of growth. So a empirical strategy for the project, I've explained part of it earlier, will be adopting both a primary and secondary approach. For the first objective, we use secondary analysis using panel data, collect data for 44 of the sub-Saharan African countries, and be able to do a simulation and run a model and see if we the nature of relationship between the two. And then the major part of the work is in the primary assessment, where we'll be doing data collection on those relationships through direct interviews and possibly get some more information that could not be gotten through secondary data. And this is important to inform our policy, especially now that there is increased attention in this area, and it will help policymakers to be able to identify areas, important areas to focus on. Okay, the way forward, conclude the secondary analysis, which is nearing the final stage, get source of funding to conduct the two-stage primary analysis, and possibly produce a book or a report from it that documents our various observation and things that can cover. So one can be academic for academic purposes, while the other part is mostly for policy analysis purposes, which will be available for policymakers. So finally, these are just policy implications of green energy, the fact that it supports environmental sustainability plans of many governments, and government also needs to consider investment as a priority. And there's a group of thought that has suggested that most developing countries don't have the resources to pursue all the 17 goals at the same time. So they call for many of them, depending on their features, to identify some goals that are key or strategic to them or are priority goals for them, and commit resources to achieving those ones. And most of the goals overlap. So if you are able to focus on education and have quality education, you might be able to address poverty, be able to reduce poverty level, which will reduce hunger and bring about better health and things like that. So there are short-term costs, there are costs that short the one that short-term in nature. And so comparing that with the long-term benefit of green growth, we should be able to work together in a way that the short-term cost can be offset by the long-term benefit, and not focus on the cost of it. And so the time to act is now. We need commitment. So in conclusion, structural change and transformation is necessary for all sectors, including the energy sector, for us to have sustainable development. And one of the ways is to green the energy sector, improve the way it provides the services. And we can't overemphasize the importance of increased investment in renewable technologies for us to have sustainable development. So green energy can be a way or a tool for sustainable development. Thank you for listening.
Okay, thank you very much. Other questions? Mila.
Yes, it was a very interesting presentation. One thing that, as a researcher, came to my mind, it's really
can respond.
Okay. Well, it's quite unfortunate that, sometimes the corporate organizations and business environments could be hostile to researchers. And one of the things we did when we experienced that was to contact the association. For both countries, they have associations that manage industries. And also, that was a bit problematic, getting a response from them. They write you, tell you they'll get back to you. Everybody has to get approval from somebody. You have to get approval from somebody. We also tried to contact the Ministry of Industry. And we were able to get some response. But of course, they also told us the thing is they can only try to speak with them and persuade them, but they can't force them if it's not part of their policy. So we're able to get some domestic companies that were able to cooperate with us and to also do that. And then some other people, they are willing to, but they have to seek approval from the parent companies that are outside the country, which takes some time. And you know, these projects are time bound. You have to do them within a specific time period. So, but there are data on that big corporations. I think one of the things we underestimated the degree of cooperation. So one of the things we learned is to start the groundwork ahead of time. So before moving into the field, probably do a pre-field analysis, do some visits, get some people, if it's not your particular country, get some people that are familiar with some of those corporations or some of those government officials to speak with them, because there are usually a lot of back and forth. Some of them, by the time they got back to us, I was already back in Nigeria analyzing results. Because I supervised the Ghana team, the Ghana field work. So, but the small and micro firms were so cooperative. There was a community we went to and we were asking questions. And then you see some of those companies call us, you've not asked me, you've not come and see me. So those ones were more welcoming to us. And we found out they were able to get useful results from them that you might not even be able to get from some of those big corporations, because I mean, they tell you what they think you want to know, and there may be no way for you to cross-check some of these things. Because I go to a small business and she tells me she uses diesel generator. I'm seeing the generator there and I'm seeing what she's telling me right there and there, because it's small. But there are data there. Just you have to do more work and be able to create more time to get responses for them. So that was one thing we learned.
Okay, thank you. Just a few comments about the measurement of environmental policies. What are the variables that you are going to use to measure environmental policies, which in your model? And also green energy, because you are going to use a couple of sub-Saharan African countries, and I know most of these countries, they have missing data in some issues, particularly on energy. So I don't know how you are going to overcome this challenge. Also, the issue of methodology, you are going to use GMM, generalizing method of economics. You didn't give us any justification for that, but maybe for the issue of endogeneity. But also, GMM has cost. It has also disadvantages in instruments, because just it uses a lack independent variables without taking any theoretical justification for these instruments. So I recommend to use two-stage least squares to try to find good instruments like that has, you know, features of exogeneity of instrument. I think it's better than GMM.
Thank you very much for this comment. In terms of measure of environmental policies, we would try to look at air pollution majorly, and there are different types of measures now for air pollution. So we try to do like a compound analysis. And in terms of data, I mentioned earlier, so some of the issues we have conducting data for some of these analysis for some of these countries is in terms of data availability. So most times panel data helps with that, where you are able to, because you have a lot of observations by the time you are able to employ panel data analysis. But then for some of these countries, at least they have data up to 2016-2017. So most times you just stop where you are able to have the data, and then sometimes even when they're available, different databases have different values or different figures. So at times you find out that domestic countries, their figures when they have it is different from what World Bank has or what United Nations database has. And so we just look at the measurement that they all use to arrive at their figures and see which one is most reliable. So for measure of green growth, like I said earlier, we'll try to have a model of the green growth model, so to speak, where we'll look at a mirror aspect that if this happens, we assume this is brown growth, and if this happens, we assume this is green growth. And for instance, if you try to look at the share of renewable energy with measure of GDP per capita, for instance, on GDP, and then depending on the value they take, maybe we'll have between 0 and 1. So the closer they are to 1, you assume a green growth situation, and the closer they are to 0, you assume a brown growth situation. And for GMM, I agree with you, it helps to solve problem of endogeneity, because most of those variables, you could have them related. But this two-stage least square, we'll take a look at it and then we'll be able to look at what works best and if that works better, and be able to use that. Thank you for that.
Can I take a final question by Tony?
I mean, you mentioned the issue of, I think, fiscal subsidies, and you know, one of the problems we know in this area is that subsidies to fossil fuel use globally are at least $500 billion annually. So, you know, the whole pattern of economic growth is very, very weighted to the use of fossil fuels, coal especially, in energy generation that underpins nearly all growth models, both developed and developing country. So I just wondered if you had any observations, because you mentioned the importance of political economy. I mean, Nigeria has got very large fiscal subsidies, I assume, because of the oil production. And it tends to be the fossil fuel producers that tend to have the largest subsidies to fossil fuel use. I wondered if you had any observations on the political economy of stripping out those subsidies from economies like Nigeria, because, you know, one of the problems you've got is, at least in the short term, you're probably going to have a negative impact on the poor, because you're effectively raised the price of energy. So if we take the previous presentation about Senegal, and if you're applying a fuzzy poverty measure to the implications of fossil fuel reform to achieve green growth ultimately, the actual getting there, the adjustment path, probably would have quite large negative poverty impacts, which of course would affect the politics of the whole transition. So I wondered if you had any thoughts on that.
Thank you very much. I mentioned earlier that I worked on energy subsidies for my PhD program, and I used the computable general equilibrium model to try to simulate the impact that removing subsidies will have on the environment. And we found out that at initial years, it will help to reduce environmental degradation and improve environmental quality because of higher prices of fuel, and so people will tend to use it lower. But we noticed that after some years, it began to increase. And so that's because after a while, there is no replacement. There is no ready alternative to replace fossil fuel. So if you are trying to take away subsidies on fossil fuel, and then there is no cleaner alternative to replace it, over time, people will just give up and continue using the fossil that they have. Like in the Nordic Institute, there's a team that were doing the research, and the video is available on the Nordic website, where they actually interviewed some women, I believe it's in a community in Zambia, or Mozambique, one of them. And they were talking to women that use wood for cooking. And they were telling the researchers how there's no way they can stop using coal. No matter how we say it's bad for the environment, they cannot use it because clean energy is expensive for them to use. So this is the only one that is available for them that they can afford. And so you find out that they don't even have forest anymore because they fall all the trees and use them for cooking, that they now have to go to other villages, other towns to get wood for burning. So these are the political issues and why we always emphasize for government to be able to provide the needed environment, even if they can't provide the finance to subsidize renewable energy or commercialize them. Instead of subsidizing fossil fuel, that obviously is going to finish at one point, and some of your major buyers today, they are developing their energy sector to the point where they wouldn't need your energy anymore. And so there is need for you to move to this renewable energy, not only because of the environmental impact of it, but also for your own economic sustainability. And so commercialize it or provide good environment for investors to be able to make these renewable energy technologies available for people and have access to them. And instead of subsidizing fossil fuels, subsidize renewables and have that shift. But you know, political economy of most of these policy issues, they're so complex. That you hold forums, you hold seminars, you come, you talk. ECOWAS has an energy and they regularly hold meetings in Senegal to interact between the academia, the business, and the policy makers. And everybody comes and puts blames on the other person and push blame and do this. And every year, that just will continue to that. That was why I said there's need to take urgent action. Whatever needs to be done should be done. We can learn examples from other countries, what they are doing, what they've done so far. Like ClimateScope, I think they usually release assessment of countries that are top in clean energy adoption. And I think Chile also was number one country for last year. And there are so many of these emerging and developing countries in Asia that are doing so well in terms of managing the environment. What are the lessons that can be learned from there? That's the reason for works like this. So policymakers can see the areas that they need to justify efforts in.
Okay, great. Thank you so much. I think we're going to close here. Thank you all for coming.